Moncrief on News Talk
with the Dacia Duster. Shockingly affordable, and now with 3 months deferred payments too.
Now, given the recent rows in this part of the world over transgender people, you might be forgiven for thinking that transgenderism is a relatively recent phenomenon, but it has existed and been recognised for hundreds of years in some parts of the world. For instance, in India and many parts of Asia, where the Hijra are thought of as a third gender. On the line is Jessica Hinchey from Nanyang Technical University in Singapore. Afternoon, Jessica.
Afternoon.
How long have the Hijra existed for?
So, I couldn't give you an origin date or start date, but certainly throughout, you know, much of South Asian history, recorded history at least, and, you know, there's a lot of evidence for the early modern and modern period.
And were they always accepted as a third gender?
Yes, to a large degree. So there isn't a singular Hijra identity today or historically. And, you know, Hijras would articulate who they are in varied ways, but certainly as a, you know, as a social role and as a gender role, they have been, you know, to a large degree accepted within the society. So just a little bit on the Hijra community, perhaps. They were and are performers who collect badhai or donations, especially at the time of births and other celebrations. And they live in households usually that are structured by discipleship relationships between senior gurus and chelas or disciples. And they usually have a feminine gender identity. Yes, there's a distinct sort of Hijra gender role that is recorded over a long, expansive history.
And is it interchangeable with the term eunuch, or is that a more British term for them?
That is a British term, yeah. So that was a term that was used particularly in a context of colonial policing, but also more broadly. And it does, you know, misrepresent the Hijra gender identity in multiple ways. A lot of Hijras today find that term very offensive as well.
And the acceptance of them, does that have some of its roots in Hinduism?
So I think acceptance, so the period that I work on is the 19th century, and it's quite clear that the Hijra community are socially marginalized to some degree in that period. And it's clear that they become more socially marginalized over the course of the 19th and 20th centuries. And certainly a lot of, there are, you know, Hindu texts, Sanskrit texts that do describe crossing between genders and also describe third gender roles, not necessarily, not using the term Hijra in the Sanskrit text is my understanding, but there are these third gender roles in these, you know, Sanskrit texts. Yeah.
So that marginalization process in the 19th and 20th century, was that driven by a colonial influence?
To a large degree, there's a few factors. So in the middle of the 19th century, the British began to see the Hijra community as, you know, a social problem that needed to be controlled. And they described them as being sexually immoral. And a lot of that was to do with a British sort of misunderstanding of their gender role, given a binary understanding of gender, but also as having cultural practices that were viewed as being criminal. The British had a difficult time trying to grasp the discipleship relationships within the Hijra community. And so there is a concerted project to criminalize the Hijra community. They are from the 1870s and they were prohibited from wearing feminine clothing, from performing in public. Their discipleship and succession practices were interfered with, and children were forcibly removed from Hijra households. At the same time, there was certainly a backing of that anti-Hijra campaign by Europeans as well. There wasn't a large sort of like moral panic, at least in my region in northern India, among more elite Indians about the Hijra community. But when elite Indian men did write about them, they were backing really pretty harsh measures like banishment or, you know, police registration and that sort of thing. Mm. So it was largely a colonial preoccupation, but there was certainly support for that project from elite Indians at the same time.
How did the Hijra community survive then?
Yeah, so that's a good question, because it was explicitly a project of elimination. The terms extirpation and extinction were used in colonial records. And, you know, the attempt was to erase the Hijra community in public space and as a social role in a community. So they survived, first of all, because colonial governance was and policing was quite uneven. And that was in part because the Hijra community became very good at evading the police, at avoiding the police, and at practicing, you know, important cultural practices that had been prohibited. So particularly, you know, expressing their gender through feminine clothing, performing in public and in other contexts. So a large part of that answer is the, you know, the sort of survival strategies and resistance of the Hijra community. And then part of that is also in some ways the sort of limits of colonial power on the ground. And, you know, we see this in a lot of colonial sort of so-called civilizing projects that, of course, the power of the colonial state to affect these massive transformations is in practice uneven.
Mm. And today, is the community relatively safe, or does it still suffer from discrimination?
Right. So I think there's two things that are important there. So first of all, since at least the mid-20th century, there's been a really vibrant and important Hijra activist movement, which has challenged social stigmatization and Hijra's continued experiences of police harassment and abuse, and also the denial of their citizenship rights in practice. And the other part of that story is that there are really uncanny echoes between state policies and policing practices today and the colonial anti-Hijra project. And I'm more familiar with the situation in India, which I study, but, you know, in India today, some states have police acts that include sections that are actually modeled on this 1870s law that criminalized the Hijra community. They do continue to experience police harassment. And although the Supreme Court has recognized the constitutional rights of transgender and gender diverse people since 2014, some recent Indian government policies and laws have really undermined that. So the Indian Parliament passed an act in 2019, which ostensibly recognized transgender rights, including the rights of the Hijra community, but in fact limited their right to gender self-determination by essentially making district bureaucrats able to, you know, approve or disapprove of official recognition for individuals as transgender. And that law has a number of other problems that Hijra activists have and trans activists have, you know, shown are discriminatory against these communities. So even with legal recognition of transgender rights in recent years, many recent government policies have undermined that right to gender self-determination and are discriminatory.
Jessica Hinshi is Assistant Professor of History at Nanyang Technological University in Singapore. Jessica, thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Moncrief on News Talk
with the Dacia range. Drive away today with no payments for the first 3 months.